Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Sengary, and we're going to have a bit of a workout this morning. Some on land, some on sea. We'll start by learning about those wonderful dragon boats, then hear about a new film about Lake Champlain and one person's two-week kayaking trip on it. And then we'll head back to dry land when we learn about Girls on the Run Vermont. And we finish the morning with the last of our open phones for the week. But we will start eventually heading out on the lake, having a little problem connecting with our first guest. And this happens every once in a while. We're going to be talking about Dragonheart, Vermont, and the Dragon Boats Festival, the Lake Champlain Dragon Boats Festival, which is coming up in August, early August. But it is time to put together a team. There's a lot of new things that they're instituting this year at Dragonheart, Vermont, so that it makes it a little bit easier to put together a team. And I think you can even sign on as a free agent. And I will tell you that this is probably one of the most rigorous and uplifting events you'll ever be involved with. I participated in a few years ago, and that is the Lake Champlain Dragon Boat Festival hosted by Dragonheart Vermont. Joining me now is Dragonheart Vermont's Executive Director, Nina Atkinson. Nina, welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hey, how are you today?
Good. How you doing?
Doing great.
Excellent. Listeners, if you'd like to ask Nina about Dragonheart, Vermont, or if you've ever participated in the Dragon Boat Festival, you can call us and tell us about it, 802-244-1777 or 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Nina, for anyone who's never seen them, what are these dragon boats?
Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
They are 40 feet long. Paddlers sit 2x2 in 10 rows. Normal size is 20 paddlers plus a drummer in the front, a steersperson in the back. And we paddle nationally and internationally at dragon boat races. We've got our next biggest competition coming up in Florida, our world competition. Us is like the Olympics. But we're really excited about the festival. We'll be using the same dragon boats, but the team sizes are smaller, just 16 paddlers with one drummer in the front. We supply an expert steersperson to go across the finish line in about a minute, paddling as fast as you can in sync, all for a good cause, supporting cancer organizations here in Vermont.
Yeah, and the key word to powering these things is in sync, right? explain that, because you watch a race, right? You see two dragon boats head across Lake Champlain, and one's just gliding and moving at light speed, and the other is having a little problems, and I know exactly why now.
Yeah, that's right. I am a fairly new paddler. I joined Dragonheart Vermont about 5 years ago, and I learned very quickly that we don't go very fast if we all paddle like Fred Flintstone in his car. And we have to work together to paddle in sync, very similar to what we see with synchronized swimming. It becomes a beautiful, gliding, almost zen-like feeling,
yeah,
when the whole team works together and paddles as one.
Yeah, and if it's not working, it's a bit herky-jerky. Now, let's talk about Dragonheart, Vermont. What is the mission of this group?
We support breast cancer survivors in Vermont. We offer wellness programs throughout the year, but we are most visible on the water in Burlington, right off the waterfront park. We practice four nights a week during the summer, and in August, the first Sunday in August, we hold the biggest, funnest fundraiser of the year on the water, the Lake Champlain Dragon Boat Festival, presented by Community Bank, our favorite bankers.
All right. So to be part of that, the Lake Champlain Dragon Boat Festival, you put together a team. So now you mentioned the fact that it's a little smaller than it was in the past. So before, I think you had to get, was it 20 or 21 people? What's the deal now?
So where we used to ask for teams to register with 21 participants, that's 20 paddlers plus a drummer in the front, we're making the teams smaller so that we're only looking for 16 paddlers plus a drummer. And we're making it even easier to participate in this fun event for folks who don't have a team association but still want to participate, still want to paddle, still want to help out our cancer survivors here in Vermont. They can sign up and register, and we will put them with a team that is coming up short on paddlers. So everyone gets to have fun on Sunday, August 7th.
So free agency, which has hit all professional sports, has now hit the Dragon Boat Festival. Is that what you're telling us?
Exactly. There's fun for everyone.
And it is fun, and it's a great way to raise money for great causes. So where does the money go that's raised on that weekend in August?
All the funds stay local. We are raising funds for support and wellness programs at Dragon Heart Vermont and this year's charity recipient, our pledge partner, is the Cancer Patient Support Foundation, specifically their emergency fund.
And Nina, you have something this year called Splash for Cash Dash.
That's right. We are featuring our three top fundraising teams in a special race that will take place right after the flower ceremony. And if folks have not been down at the waterfront the first Sunday in August to see this beautiful, beautiful event, our breast cancer teams get out on the water, each holding a flower. We have a short song and a few words for our friends who have gone down this journey of cancer and breast cancer, and we toss our flowers in the lake in their honor. It's just a beautiful thing to see. And right after the flower ceremony, we're introducing the first ever Splash for Cash Dash so that our top three fundraising teams get one extra race on the waters of Lake Champlain.
Oh, that's so cool. Now, people, you know, sometimes worry, you know, they might not join in a team that's going to be in the Dragon Boat Festival, or maybe they, you know, think, oh, yeah, I would do, I don't know what I'm doing. And there is a way of overcoming this. So what kind of prep and coaching does someone receive, either individually or they would be on a team, obviously, these free agents, but in advance of the festival, so you don't show up day of green and not knowing how to power a dragon boat? Because like we said, it does, there's a trick to it. There's a real, I don't know, team unity that has to happen for this boat to move.
You're absolutely right. Now, we are providing all of the equipment, and we're offering a training session so that everybody gets an opportunity to go over our safety procedures as well as the basic strokes to be successful on the water. And what we call successful is getting in the boat, having a great time, splashing around, and eventually making it across the finish line. We go three boats at a time, sometimes two at a time, so you're racing against yourselves. You'll always finish first in your lane. But we time our races. We make it across in just about a minute. So everybody can do anything for 60 seconds. And it is great fun to hear the horn, start paddling as hard as you can, yeah, and cross the finish line in front of your friends and family watching from the waterfront.
Yeah, and Nina, I'm glad you pointed out that the equipment is provided. You don't have to bring your own oars, and you don't have to start carving out a dragon boat right now. put the time and energy in finding a group of friends, coworkers, and you know, start registering for this great event, which is coming up in early August. So that's why we're talking about it now. It's the perfect time to put a team together.
Perfect time to register.
It is, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nina, let's talk a little bit more about Dragon Heart Vermont. How has this organization grown? When did you first form? How many people, how many boats do you have out on the lake performing this?
We have been at the Burlington Waterfront since 2004. Mm. Our founders are John and Linda Dyer. Linda is a breast cancer survivor and learned that dragon boating, the actual movements of dragon boating, is the best therapy for breast cancer patients who had gone through surgery. It reduces complications arising from surgery. It brings breast cancer survivors back to a full in full form in body, mind, and spirit. There's a great camaraderie that comes with dragon boating. So we have been carrying out our mission as early as 2004, and we have grown to about 200 members that include breast cancer survivors as well as supporters of breast cancer survivors. We've got husbands and wives. We've got grandparents and grandchildren. We've got parents and children, all as members helping us out, spreading the good word that we're here to support our cancer survivors in the area.
Oh,
we've got
fantastic.
10 boats,
wow.
10 teams that compete recreationally as well as competitively. And we try and do as much as we can out in the community, helping out as often and as much as we can. COVID kind of kept us home for the last 2 years, but we're really excited about being out on the water. In fact, our first practice is today with a very special eye-dotting ceremony. And it is a tradition with dragon boating, which is a Chinese sport. By the way, it's the second fastest growing water sport in the world right now.
What is eye dotting?
So the eye dotting is a traditional season opening ceremony where we will present to the gods our hope for vision and strength and a taste of victory. So dragon heads are put on the front of our dragon boats. We have heads and tails that are on the front and back of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And we will paint the eyes to give us vision. We'll paint a dot on the tongue to give us the taste of victory. And we also paint a dot on the horns to show us and put us in the right path for strength.
Mm. Oh, I love it. Now, if someone wanted to be part of a dragon boat team, again, it's difficult to just join. But you do allow newbies to come in and have a way to get them started, don't you?
Exactly. Joining isn't as hard as one thinks.
Yeah.
We're really looking for folks who love to be with other people, love the water, even folks who are not so sure about being on the water, it's still really fun. We all fall in love with being together on the boat. We do offer what we call drop-in nights or newbie nights, where we have a boat that is just for our first-timers. We give a little bit more land safety instruction and then get out in the boat and just splash around, have some fun. And the way I put it is give everyone the opportunity to drink the Kool-Aid and fall in love with dragon boating.
It really is something unlike anything you'll ever do. And if you want to take part in the Lake Champlain Dragon Boat Festival, that's coming up in early August. Time to register a team. Let's go over what people need again, Nina, to put together a team to get registered.
Well, to register a team, your first step will be to get on our website and come up with a really fun name to register. Then we will provide a link so that all of your team members can register and pay their entry fee. If you are not associated with a team, no need to set up your team. You just log on and register as a free agent or an independent paddler and we'll find a team for you. So everyone has the opportunity to give dragon boating a try. It's fun to watch.
It is.
It's really fun to get out there and splash around in the water with everybody.
The website is dragonheartvermont.org. That's where you can go to learn more about it, to get your team or you individually registered. How many teams are you able to have at the festival?
We can have up to 65 teams, and we will have one to two minute races throughout the day starting at 8:30. Everybody is out there for fun, but we also offer the Champ Festival Cup and great other prizes, such as a spirit prize for the teams that have the best spirit, and other, it's a double elimination bracket, so everyone will race at least twice.
Yeah, and let's talk about that Spirit Award and the idea of spirit, because you get caught up in it to begin with, but you also have, you should create a team cheer or chant, is that right?
Yep, we ask folks to come up with the zaniest costumes or themed costumes to, you know, get together, have your friends, your teammates, have some really good fun and be a little crazy out at the waterfront.
And Nina, do you have teams that come back year after year? I know we had the COVID interruption, but are there teams that have been competing on this or in this competition for years now?
We've had teams that have come back year after year. We also welcome new teams who, again, like I said, they drink the Kool-Aid and they start coming back year after year. So we're really excited to welcome everybody back and introduce our new teams to this really fun event.
And an important thing to note, if you've had a team in the past, you find it difficult to find 20 people. This year, you can register with less people, correct?
That's right. That's right, and we will help fill up your team with our free agents that will register individually.
Now, you also have an event on the Saturday before the big festival, and this is the Sisters at Heart celebration. What takes place then?
This is a beautiful gathering called the Sisters at Heart celebration, where the Dragonheart Vermont breast cancer teams invite other breast cancer teams from around the country and Canada to spend a weekend with us to participate in Sunday's festival. But on Saturday, it's a day of celebration and camaraderie. And these teams come together, we share our stories, we get out on the water and we paddle together. We have land and water workshops, and it is a chance for us to see each other, where in the past 2 years, we haven't had that opportunity. So we're really excited to have the Sisters at Heart celebration down at the waterfront Saturday, August 6th.
And then for those who just aren't able to compete, coming out on Sunday the 7th, explain what spectators will experience when they're down there on the waterfront.
There will be races that are going on throughout the day. They come from the splash docks into the community boat launch for a 200-meter race. It is really exciting to watch. At the park itself, we will have displays out for wellness, fitness, cancer-related organizations. There will be booths that are offering items for sale that is dragon boat related and fitness related. There'll be some entertainment, and it'll be a whole lot of fun for every age.
All right, and you're registering teams right now. Is there a deadline for registration?
There is no deadline for registration. We anticipate our registration to go right up until the week before the festival, and the festival is August 7th.
All right. Anything else we missed on changes you've made to the festival this year?
Let's see. We talked about the festival being on August 7th. We've talked about team registrations, our free agent registration, mm-hmm. our new Splash for Cash Dash, our Spirit Awards. We're new to TikTok. I know nothing about TikTok, but we're now on TikTok, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun on that. I have no idea, but thank goodness we have great people, great members and volunteers for Dragon Heart getting us on TikTok. So it should be fun.
I believe that's the first time on this show that anyone has said we're new to TikTok. And so I applaud you. You're way ahead of the curve there, Nina. Nina Atkinson is the executive director of Dragon Heart Vermont. This year's Lake Champlain Dragon Boat Festival takes place on August 7th. And to learn more, to sign up, you can visit dragonheartvermont.org. Nina, thanks for getting us ready for a summer of dragon boating. It really is a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Rick. It's great to talk with you.
Always great talking to you. Thanks. Take care. We're going to take a break for a CBS News update and then come back to hear about a new film about one man's 14-day kayak journey on Lake Champlain. And coming up today at 1, we've got the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman. That's followed by 2 hours of The Getaway, hosted by gracious Greg Hooker. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Did you know that Radio Vermont Group Digital Services can create videos, including drone footage? We've even won awards for our videos. If you'd like to learn more and see examples of our work, go to rvgdigital.com. Radio Vermont Group, we're more than just radio.
We're back on Vermont Viewpoint. We've heard a lot about the sixth Great Lake, Lake Champlain, its history of commerce, war, and sunken ships. We know well the recreation opportunities that it offers. And we've heard an awful lot about the damage that has been done to the cleanliness of the lake through years of runoff from the communities that abut its watershed. One person decided to get a first-hand look at the 120-mile length of the lake by kayaking on it for 2 weeks and filming what he observed. The result is a new film called No Other Lake, and here to tell us about what he saw and about the film is Jordan Rowell. Jordan, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hi there, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Listeners, to ask Jordan about No Other Lake, you can call us at 802-244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Now, Jordan, where do you grow up?
I grew up just about 7 miles from Lake Champlain in Essex Junction, Vermont.
Mm-hmm. And before doing this film, how much did you know about Lake Champlain? How much time had you spent in it or on it?
Right. Yeah, not a ton, honestly. I grew up frequenting the Burlington waterfront with my grandmother, where we'd go get French fries on the dock at Splash, one of my fondest memories on the lake. I grew up going to the beaches at North Beach and at the sandbar, but, you know, I was never, you know, the family was never big into, like, boating growing up. And so for me, you know, the lake was largely something pretty to look at from the shore. It wasn't something that I really had a strong relationship to, compared to maybe the mountains of Vermont, where I grew up skiing and hiking.
Yeah. So what sparked this idea to do this movie?
It's a good question. I think, you know, I first had the thought for the trip is I was sitting in class at UVM, taking a class with my professors, Chris Brooks and Walter Pullman, all about Vermont and all about the Lake Champlain Basin. I returned to Vermont to come back to school in 2020 and was sort of stunned at all of the stuff about Lake Champlain that I didn't know, despite growing up here. And I'm the type of person that can't spend too long sitting at a desk in school. And so I wanted to sort of continue my own learning and maybe create something to share with other people who either, you know, were young and growing up here and deserved to learn more about Lake Champlain, or who, like me, you know, went through a lot of their lives without, you know, really deeply understanding some of the challenges of the lake. And so the idea for getting out there on my kayak and making a film about it kind of grew out of that experience.
The film is called No Other Lake. What does the title mean?
Yeah, we spent a long time trying to come up with a title, and ultimately, yeah, we're pretty happy with that one. You know, it came out of listening to one of the interviews that we had on the trip. This gentleman, Pierre Leduc, up in Canada, was talking with us about a cyanobacteria bloom that we confronted firsthand on the very last day of our trip. And his, you know, what he said about that was essentially like, when we see these things happening on the lake, we want people to feel inspired to do something about it, you know, see the harm that's being done to this place we call home and the place we have great pride of, and have that inspire them to take action and not just turn their backs and say like, oh, let's go find another lake. And so what essentially he was saying is like, if we do this to all of our water bodies, you know, if we can't figure out how to live here sustainably, there isn't going to be another lake to go to.
No other lake. Explain what people will see during the course of the 40-minute film.
Sure. So it starts out with, you know, me talking about how, like you said, yeah, I grew up here and I didn't know much about it, and why I wanted to learn more about the lake. I think a lot of people who live in the Lake Champlain Basin are familiar with, you know, what some people call blue-green algae or the cyanobacteria, or maybe if you're a boater or an angler, you know, about invasive species that kind of choke out fish habitat and, you know, get caught up in boat motors, and et cetera. So we didn't spend a ton of time in the film talking specifically about sort of the science behind the issues, because we wanted it to be more about engaging people in sort of this idea of what does it mean to have a relationship with the place? What does it mean, you know, for humans to live in a basin like this and contribute to it and not just take from it? And so over the course of the film, I paddle from one end of the lake to the other and talk with people about this question of what does it mean for humans to live here in the long term? What should we be doing? And, you know, as I go along the trip, it's more and more about, yeah, what does it mean to have a relationship with this place? Because that can be sort of a funny question and sort of a new way to look at things, as opposed to just humans kind of having a domain over our natural resources. And so there's beautiful cinematography by the cinematographer and editor of the film, Dwayne Peterson. There's drone photography by our friend Ryan Malley that just capture like these super cool places on the lake, whether it's Split Rock Wildway or whether it's the narrow south part of the lake that's so narrow you can throw a rock across it. And then without any spoilers, you know, it does end with sort of this really heavy, powerful moment of sort of everyone asking ourselves, like, what have we done to this place that it turns into, you know, some of the dark sides of this pollution that we can see firsthand. And then hopefully leaving people with an optimistic and hopeful perspective of what they can do to heal our relationship with this place.
2 weeks kayaking the length of the lake, Jordan. So what had been your longest kayak before this?
Not very far. I'm not a water person, to be honest. I'm kind of scared of the water. And so I paddled, you know, my family had a canoe growing up, and I think we had a kayak. And I remember paddling around North Beach one afternoon, and that's it. I like hiking. I've done several, like, long-distance backpacking trips, so I get the whole camping, you know, and carrying everything you need on your back. But doing it on the lake was something entirely new to me, and so I had to, like, talk with people and try to find some local mentors to teach me. Because the lake can get pretty sketchy. You know, it's a big lake. You can pick up some big waves and some weather. And so, you know, I didn't really, like, I didn't have a ton of experience going into it, but I did spend a lot of time last summer trying to make up for lost time and make sure I had the right gear and the right mindset to be safe, because the lake can be a dangerous place for sure.
Yeah. How long would you be out on the lake on a typical day?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much all day. I wasn't moving very fast, one, because my form was terrible, using way too much of my arms, not enough of my core.
Right.
But so I was slow, but I was also just trying to, like, absorb the place, right? Like, if you're trying to get from one end of the lake to the other as fast as you can, I know folks who've done it in 5-6 days, maybe even less. But for 2 weeks, that meant that I could really spend the whole day just kind of paddling along, talking with people, doing the interviews, just like hanging out and really trying to like observe and kind of take it all in. And so, I don't know, most days I'd get on the water by 9 and I'd be paddling till 3 or 4, stopping along the way. And some days were bigger paddling days than others. Some days it was so hot out there in the middle. The first half of the trip was like a heat wave in last August, if anyone remembers that.
Oh,
it was a pretty tough time to be without shade in the middle of the lake with the sun beating down on you.
I hope you used a high SPF. When you started the film and the journey, was there a point you were trying to make or a perspective you were presenting?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we were trying to present as many perspectives as possible. We didn't really have like this agenda of we wanted to expose the dairy industry of pollution at the lake. We wanted to, you know, put blame on the city wastewater treatment plants for, you know, dumping raw sewage in the lake when there's heavy storms, because we more wanted to approach it from this place of like recognizing that we're all, you know, sharing this resource. We all are trying to go through our lives and sort of the weaknesses that our society has that contribute to the pollution and invasive species and stuff. Like we're trying to say like, hey, collectively we can all do better, but pointing fingers isn't probably the best way to do it. And so instead, let's just try to learn from all these people. And, you know, I was coming from this place of sort of admitting that there was a lot I didn't know. And, you know, maybe showing some of the students that we show this film to that here's what it looks like to kind of try to explore a place and explore its challenges and learn from people. You know, we talk to farmers, we talk to the Abenaki community, we talk to water quality scientists and recreationists. And just tried to like listen and hear what they had to say. And then at the end of the process, like weave it all together and really just try to say like, yeah, we got to listen to each other a little bit more and hear these all perspectives and try to put them all together and see what we can end up with together. Mm.
Jordan, what does a film like this cost to make and how did you raise money to be able to do it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll tell you first that there's a lot of sweat equity that went into this project.
Yeah.
It was a student project on my end, and so, you know, entirely volunteer, and my filmmaking partner, Dwayne Peterson, and some of the other professionals that we roped in to help with music and cinematography and animations and stuff, everyone was working for well below their professional market wage. And so we were able to do things with some grant funding and, you know, really on a shoestring budget. And so ultimately it came out to about a $20,000 budget. It's been a project we've been working on for about 18 months. And huge shout out to the Lake Champlain Basin Program for giving us a big grant, as well as the University of Vermont And, you know, we had the support of some local gear manufacturers and some companies that helped us with some of our supplies. But, yeah, I mean, this project definitely kind of took over our lives for the past year and a half, and it's been a lot of, like, late nights and weekends and stuff. So definitely a labor of love. If somebody wanted to do something and get paid for, you know, all their work going into it, then it would be a much higher price tag, I would say. But that's not what it was about, I guess.
It's beautifully shot, beautifully edited. Yeah, it's beautifully shot and beautifully edited. I'm sure the editing, you know, people think, well, he was out there for 2 weeks, and you have all that footage now to kind of go through, put together, develop a storyline. And it's understandable why it would take, you know, that many months afterwards. How was it all filmed? Did you always have someone nearby, you know, filming you, and hopefully, you know, in case you needed assistance? Because this was, again, for you, a kayaking kind of, you know, level that was beyond what you had done before.
Yeah, so luckily, you know, it always helps to have talented friends, right? Surround yourself with people that are smarter and more capable than you are.
Right.
Yeah, couldn't have done it without my friends Dwayne and Ryan, who are the, you know, have the skills. So we didn't want to make a movie that was just like with a GoPro or with a drone, where you kind of felt like distant from the action. We wanted, you know, young students who are, you know, in the basin, or, you know, people that live here, to watch the film and feel like they were on the trip with us, mm-hmm. Because not everyone has the access or the ability to get out there themselves. We hope they can, but the next best thing is to hopefully watch this film. And so we used a lot of different perspectives. Like, we had to get a boat so that Dwayne could follow me on the water. We had this little inflatable boat with a small motor on it, and so he could zip around and get all the different angles of me paddling, and then be able to meet up with me from place to place to conduct these interviews that we had. Right. We, you know, talked to about a dozen different people along the way. And, you know, not only do we have the logistics of setting up camp and the paddling and the food and all that stuff, but we also had to figure out, you know, keep a interview schedule and be at the right place at the right time with the right light, which all got, you know, fairly complicated. But, it was, there was like a lot of moving parts, and hopefully got different angles that showed like the underwater angle. We got up high. We've got the beautiful cliffs. We've got, you know, the wildlife photography on, you know, on land. And so I think really captures like the beauty of this place, as well as some of its darkest moments as well.
Mm-hmm. Where has the film shown so far, Jordan?
Yeah, so we had an awesome premiere in Burlington on April 21st. So the film has only been out for about a month, so it's still very new. We also showed it at UVM because it was important to really get this film in front of students, both from the college level all the way down to the middle school level. I was at Georgia Elementary and Middle School last week showing the film to about 100 different middle school students who were all very excited about it. We're showing it again this week on Friday in South Hero, Friday night at 8 p.m. You can join us at the Worthen Library for an outdoor screening at 8 p.m. And that should be a bunch of fun. So we're kind of in the middle of this basin-wide tour because we want to connect it to local people first with an emphasis on students, hopefully give them something cool to connect, you know, the science and stuff they're learning in class to sort of this bigger picture and this adventure and something fun to connect that that learning to.
And people can check out LakeChamplainFilm.com, the website, to keep up to date on how they can see it. I do have an email here from BT and asks, what kind and size of kayak did you use?
Yeah, it was a 17-foot Wilderness Systems kayak, kind of an entry-level sea kayak. And so it was pretty fast. It was plastic, not like your fancy boat, you know, carbon boat, because, we didn't have a very big budget for that stuff. And also I'm pretty hard on gear, so I wanted to be able to drag it around on the rocks and stuff. But I had to learn how to like enter or exit a kayak if you flip it over by accident, and like all this like safety techniques with this paddle float and tagline, and yeah, these interesting techniques to try to make sure I knew what I was doing out there. And then it was a good boat for me. I enjoyed it.
We've got 30 seconds left. What do you hope this film inspires in people who see it?
Yeah, I hope it inspires, first off, people to reexamine their relationship with a place like Lake Champlain. How well do they really know it? Even if you live close to its shore, how often do you get to look at a sunset or go paddle on it? And second, I want people to be inspired to take part in its stewardship, really be engaged as Trevian Stanger says in the film, as a participant of this place. And what does that mean? Hopefully that means doing something to help promote a healthy watershed for this place into the future.
Mm. Jordan Rowell is the producer and director of No Other Lake. You can learn more about it at lakechamplainfilm.com. Jordan, outstanding work. Thanks for taking the time on this project and time for sharing it with us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been a real pleasure for me.
All right, have a great day. We're going to break for a CBS News update and then return to talk about Girls on the Run Vermont. And coming up tonight at 7:10, we've got the Bo Sox in the south side of Chicago to take on the Chi Sox. First pitch, 8:10. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
We hope you're enjoying this podcast of Vermont Viewpoint with Rick Singeri. You can find podcasts of some of the other programs on our website. In addition, we also have CBS podcasts, including Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley and 60 Minutes. For a full listing of podcasts, visit our website at WDEVradio.com.
We're back on Vermont Viewpoint. So far this morning, we've heard about the dragon boats and about a kayaker who traveled the length of Lake Champlain. Now, let's get on some firm footing and learn about an organization that is dedicated to getting young women to lace up the sneakers and get active. It's called Girls on the Run Vermont. Joining me now is their executive director, Rachel Desitel. Rachel, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you about Girls on the Run.
We're excited to have you. And we also have Hillary Sales, a longtime volunteer with Girls on the Run. Hillary, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Listeners, to ask our guests about Girls on the Run, or if you or someone you know has participated, you can call us at 802-244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Rachel, what exactly is Girls on the Run?
Oh, well, that's a great question. It is a nonprofit statewide program for girls in third through eighth grade. It's a curriculum-run program led by our phenomenal volunteer coaches, as Hillary will be able to share with you later.
Yep.
And it's a program that builds girls' self-confidence. So there's social and emotional learning that comes from this program, as well as a physical benefit from the movement that comes well along with the 16 lessons in the season.
When did the national program start, and when and why did the Vermont chapter start?
So Girls on the Run started in 1996 in Charlotte, North Carolina, by a woman named Molly Barker. She had a vision that there was a need for a program like this for girls, and just a few short years later, in 1999, Girls on the Run Vermont was established as a council in the southern part of Vermont in Vernon, and it started with 15 girls in 1999, and we've seen as many as almost 3,000 girls in the spring season at the peak of our before COVID.
Wow, that's an incredible growth. Hillary, what got you involved in Girls on the Run?
I have been a lifelong lover of moving my body and just being physically active. And then in 2005, I had a daughter. And I got involved with Girls on the Run in 2007 when she was just 2 years old, and just recognizing how important all of these life lessons are, and just wanted to share them with girls. I'm also a teacher, so you know, I'm teaching in elementary schools and seeing how important these lessons are for our young girls who will become strong young women, and I just wanted to be part of it.
Now, Rachel, why is this an activity that you think is important for girls of this age to be involved in?
Well, Rick, because developmentally, girls lose their self-confidence twice as much as boys by the time they're, you know, 10 years old. Mm. So having lessons that are created and cultivated, especially for girls at this young age of as young as 8 years old in third grade, to teach them to feel confident and to teach them that, you know, their thoughts and their worth is so incredibly important, and to recognize that really helps mold these girls at a time where social media and just general confusing messages are being sent to them at such a young age. We want to give them the tools and the resources to feel that self-confidence and to be able to grow up, like Hillary said, into the strong young women that they will be able to become, certainly after being exposed to these messages within the season.
Yeah. Hillary, let's talk about the coaching, the guidance that's provided for these girls as they start running.
Yeah, so as far as the curriculum that's provided to us, all the lessons are laid out so clearly, and we have, you know, a warm-up, a getting on board, ways to really hook the girls, things that are really relevant to their daily lives. And then the actual workout integrates all of those lessons into each day, and the girls learn how to set goals and learn how to pace themselves, and some girls are running from the beginning, and some girls are walking, and some girls are skipping, and some girls are doing cartwheels. And so it's really like, I mean, Girls on the Run is our goal, but it's like it's girls on the move, girls moving forward, girls using their bodies, girls being positive, girls encouraging each other. Right now I'm the head coach. We have 3 teams at our school. We have 52 girls in grades 3 through 5, and just seeing them become a community of girls on the run after school twice a week, it's so valuable.
I do have to admit that Girls on the Run is a much stronger name than girls skipping and doing other things, moving in a forward direction.
So, it's really amazing.
That's the idea.
I know.
It's so amazing to see. And it's also amazing to see those girls who are walking or stopping to pick up flowers. By the end of our 16-week session, they're all going to complete a 5K distance.
Wow.
So, you know, they learn how to set those goals and to, you know, to face challenges head on and to persevere. And it's priceless.
And as Rachel talked about, the self-confidence, now, you know, it's one thing to see them, okay, they're not walking, they're not skipping, they're now running. But what happens in that period of time and probably over the years that they're with you, to that self-confidence?
Rachel, do you want to, or do you want me to?
Hillary, I'd love to hear from you.
Go ahead, Hillary.
Okay, sure. So one of the lessons is all about a girl's star power and about how we are all so unique and we all shine our own stars. And it's so beautiful to watch these girls recognize their own uniqueness and their own star power, and then to recognize it in each other and to encourage each other to shine brightly. And when they're activating their star power, which is, you know, one of our lessons and one of our catchphrases or key phrases, you know, that just they shine and they glow and they know they can do it, and they do it.
Mm. Rachel, would you like to add to that?
I would, you know, and I'm so glad you brought up that lesson, Hillary, because I have a hard time choosing my favorite. They're all so wonderful and rich, but there's another one that we focus on, positive self-talk. And I think one of the things that I love about Girls on the Run, the curriculum and the lessons the most, is that not only are the girls starting to recognize their own star power and their own uniqueness and their own ways that they are contributing to the world in different ways than even their peers, but they learn to build up each other. And I love that so much. So for the positive self-talk, the girls recognize when they say something negative about themselves, and they create a sound or a hand motion that the team agrees on to sort of stop and recognize that and then to turn it around. Mm. And in this lesson, they're running these laps and they're reframing language, and they're helping each other find new ways to really look at life and how they perceive themselves and how they perceive each other. And in a world where, you know, we could really benefit from folks building each other up, I'm just so proud that this is the foundation of Girls on the Run, that this is something that really cultivates their personality and really helps them build each other up as opposed to tearing each other down.
I love that there's a set curriculum that you use to do this, and you've seen this work so well. Rachel, explain the kind of activities, the events that these girls who are involved with Girls on the Run Vermont will take part in.
The 5Ks at the end of the season, is that?
So if somebody shows up at the beginning of the season, they'll go through, yeah.
Sure. So there's 16 weeks, which means, and we meet twice a week after school. So there are lots of lessons for the girls to be able to, the 16 lessons. And they participate in all kinds of activities. We always start with creating an environment where they all sit in a circle and we introduce the concept every day. Every lesson's a little bit different. So we do a lot of talking and processing, and then we do a non-running or movement activity to get them on board. So it might be a game where they're talking to each other, and then we do a running or a movement activity. So it could be take the shape of a relay game, or it could. It could be all kinds of different things, and there's materials that we give the coaches, and they are able to set up all of the activities based on what the lesson requires. And so the girls, really, the idea is that they are laughing and that they feel that they are creating a team environment. They can build trust with each other, and we give the coaches cones, and we give them paper plates, if that's what one of the activities requires, or we give them a silly string, or whatever the lesson may call for. And then eventually, as the lesson progresses, there's a workout period, which is a more traditional running laps and moving your body, but there's still always games and lessons throughout, and they stop at their coaches every time they do a lap, and they earn lap bands. So again, it's not what you would think of when you think of maybe track, where the girls are constantly moving. You know, there's a lot of intentional lesson content to all of the games and all of the movement.
Rachel, where around the state is Girls on the Run happening?
It's happening over the entire state. We are a statewide nonprofit. We're in all of the counties of Vermont. We're not in every school, of course, but most schools have access to the program. It's not a school-run program, so we do depend on school administrators welcoming the program to their grounds after school, and we have about 150 sites across the state.
Wow. What would someone need to do to start a program at their school or in their area?
All they need to do is speak with the administration of the school to make sure that it's something that there's space for. Certainly, we want to make sure that there is a safe space designated for our lessons. We do start towards the end of March, and as we all know in Vermont, it's not always spring weather.
Really?
So, yeah, I know. It's shocking. It really is. But we do like to make sure that we've secured an indoor space for those first few lessons, especially when there's still a chill to the air and there's, you know, maybe some ice or snow outside. But then really after that, we encourage coaches to bring their teams outside for the entire lesson and to really, you know, get out of the building, shake off facilities and participate there. And then they contact our office and we work to recruit the coaching team that we need. We always recommend that there's at least two, but preferably three or more coaches on site. No coach can ever be alone with the kids, so we want to make sure that if somebody's sick or isn't there, that there's support for the coaching team as well. But really, after that, we supply training for all of our coaches and give them all the supplies and the support that they need from our staff here based in Williston. And we've got a couple of events throughout the season to connect with our coaches. And I feel like it's pretty easy to start a site if there's not one at your school. We would be happy to help.
Hillary, I'm going to flip it a little. You've been volunteering for quite some time coaching. What do you personally get from being part of these activities?
Okay, I'm going to try really hard not to cry. it fills my bucket for real. It does. It is the most fulfilling. I'm a teacher. I'm a music teacher, so I have every student in the whole entire school. So I feel like I already have a really good relationship with them. Mm-hmm. But then we take it to the next level, and it is just the most rewarding experience. I love the lessons. I love being able to be a strong woman to then help lead and grow these young girls into strong women.
You're allowed to weep openly on this show. I'm tearing up right now.
Well, I have to say, so I know that Rachel is going to talk about the 5K and the plea for volunteers. And if anybody wants to really feel good for the rest of the day, volunteer at that 5K. It's the most amazing experience.
Well, Rachel, let's talk about that. Perfect segue from Hillary. Hillary's going to have a career in radio next. Tell us about the 5K you've got coming up in Essex Junction next week.
Oh, I would love to. It is, like Hillary said, just the most joyful, empowering, just happy, happy day that you could imagine. It's the culmination of the season for these kiddos and their coaching teams, and they have practice moving their bodies all season so that they can physically be prepared as well as emotionally be prepared to run and or hop or skip or walk their way through this 5K. And we host two across the state. The first one is going to be Saturday, June 4th at the Champlain Valley Expo for all of our northern teams across the state, and then we'll have a second one in Manchester on Saturday, June 11th for our central and southern teams. And it's a joyful event. We encourage the girls and their coaches and family members to arrive around 8:30 in the morning at the expo, and at that point, there will be all kinds of fun events. There will be music. We'll have a DJ. We have an MC. We have all kinds of sponsor booths available with activities for the girls. They'll be putting on their event bibs. They'll be able to take advantage of face painting, and we call it happy hair. Well, we can spray some color into their hair. There's the tattoos, and there's just all kinds of fun activities. There's a giant group warm up with all the kiddos and their supporters. We do encourage running buddies, and what that looks like is somebody that can support you, because while there will be about 1,100 girls at the expo alone and maybe 400 coaches, those coaches can't run with each one of those girls like they would at their own site. So we encourage the girls to bring a supporter. Maybe that's mom or dad or adult or parent at home. It could be an aunt or an uncle or a neighbor or a sibling, a teacher, anybody that they would like to bring as their own personal champion. They register. Those folks will register for the event, and they will be able to participate with their kiddos. We also open up the expo's event to community runners, so folks that just want to be a part of the fun and the excitement and the positivity of the day, they can also register to be a part of our event. And it's just a beautiful feeling to see those kids cross the finish line. Rick, sometimes they are 5-10 girls deep holding hands with smiles on their faces. I've been doing this since, gosh, I think I've been a part of Girls on the Run Vermont since about 2014 or 13, and I'm telling you, I cry happy tears at every single 5K. It's the most beautiful thing, like Hillary said, to witness the joy and the just the completion of knowing that they did this thing, that they were able to accomplish this. It's fabulous.
Wow. Hillary, what do you need volunteer help with for these events?
Well, like Rachel said, there will be people needing registration help. So I know that Rachel needs some people to help with the registration tables. There's also, water on the course available to the runners. So we need people to person those stations to fill up water and pass out water and then clean up the station afterwards. We need people to help direct the girls on the course. you know, just standing and pointing, and of course cheering and clapping. So I know that those are definitely three areas. I'm sure Rachel has more.
Yeah, there's all, like Hillary is saying, there's just a ton of jobs and duties and responsibilities that we look to cover for the day. In fact, we typically need about 150 volunteers to make it a safe and joyful event for the kiddos. So that does span from, like Hillary said, registration and being out on the course to make sure that it's safe and cheering and bringing the energy and the water stop. There's also all of our activities. We need folks to be spraying that happy hair, and we need folks, you know, in all different spots of the 5K. So truly, we are looking to push right now for making sure that folks know that this is an available opportunity. And again, just to piggyback on what Hillary said, if you are just looking to continue to float throughout your day, just volunteer at a Girls in the Run 5K. It's just it's joyful.
Hillary, you've seen this before, you know, the building through 16 weeks and then running the 5K. So, you know, what does it mean for the girls? And, you know, as they get closer to the event, how excited do they get about running in that 5K, that special event?
They're so excited. One of the lessons that we do getting close to the 5K is an actual practice 5K. We actually just had ours last Thursday here at our school. And, you know, so every girl knows that they can cover that distance because they've practiced it. And just the excitement at our practice 5K here, running laps around our playground and our soccer fields, you know, just the incredible, we made signs and they were all, you know, high-fiving the signs for energy and encouraging each other, and just seeing that that's the way that it was here at our school for a practice 5K. I don't, especially this year post COVID, the first time that we're really able to, you know, to get together and to hold this really big event, I think it's going to be extra, extra special. I'm going to pack an extra box of tissues.
Rachel, we've got about a minute left. Let's talk long-term effects of these girls who participate in Girls on the Run. What have you seen?
Oh, sure. There's been some studies that have occurred over the years showing the positive impact long down the road from being exposed to this positive messaging and participating in building their self-confidence. And we see it. It's tangible by seeing these girls coming back and being junior coaches and when they're in high school and then coaching as adults and really seeing that impact carry on. It's just there's definitely tangible benefit to being a part of Girls in the Run, whether you're a girl, a participant in the program, or if you're a coach.
I would say to people that you would recognize Hillary and Rachel as the two women standing there weeping during this event, but I'm sure you're just two of many. I'm getting verklempt. Rachel Desitel is the executive director. Hillary Sales, longtime volunteer with Girls on the Run Vermont. And to learn more, to volunteer, to know about what's coming up with the upcoming events, it's GOTR, Girls on the Run, VT.org. Rachel, Hillary, thanks so much for being on the show this morning.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
All right, have a great day. We're going to go take a break for CBS News, and when we return, we'll open up the phones until 11. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
In decades past, you opened a business, hung out your shingle, and the customers came. Today, hanging out your shingle means creating an engaging website. The modern consumer is using the internet to find businesses like yours. Are you positioned so you'll rise to the top of their search? Let the Radio Vermont Group Digital Services work with you to make sure you're visible online and to target your marketing to location, demographic, and interest. Learn more at rvgdigital.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. What an inspiring morning. The Dragon Boats, our kayaker on Lake Champlain, turning it into a 40-minute film, and then Girls on the Run. Thanks to all the guests we've had this morning. It was great to hear all that. Now, here we go. Phones are open. Time for us to hear from you. And this is the last time I'll have open phones this week. 802-244-1777, 877-291-8255. And you can always email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. I've got three emails to follow up on from yesterday. I head to Brighton and the village of Island Pond tomorrow morning. It's the next stop on the WDEV 90th anniversary tour. Friday, we'll hear from WDEV All-Star Greg Hooker as we take the tour. On Friday, I'll also tour some of Vermont's historic inns from 9 to 10. Going to kind of whisk around the state, four different historic inns for you to hear about their history, but also the amenities. You know, with your guests coming in for the summer, I'll tip you off on some places that they might enjoy staying at. We've got the open phones for now, and like I said, I have emails, some errors and omissions I made yesterday we'll hear about. But also we can talk about what's on your mind. If you want to give me a homework assignment, we can talk about Texas, we can talk about Ukraine, Taiwan, or wherever you want to take it. All right, before I get to my emails, let's head to our leadoff batter, the Duke of Newbury. Fred is with us. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Hey, you know what? The biggest taboo in this country, I think, is not guns. Mental health. Nobody wants to talk about mental health.
There we go.
It's crazy. Yep. Somebody goes out and kills little kids with a gun. They don't want to talk about mental health. They want to talk about guns.
Well,
inanimate objects are easy to control in humans aren't. We don't spend enough money on mental health. And if you talk about mental health, something's wrong with the person. Oh my God, you got to stay away from
them. The stigma. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Crazy, yep. Isn't it? And that's no pun intended.
No, I know. I know you're just saying that not to be funny, but you're absolutely right. The mental health issues, which can lead to or could be caused by the opioid crisis is, one thing. The stresses that we are placed under, I've been saying this for years, and then I read it. Somebody equated it the same way, Fred. But, life is basically a tightrope walk. It's very difficult to stay balanced throughout a day, a week, a month, a year, a life, without being knocked off kilter, right?
That's very true. But the problem is it's easy to talk about an inanimate object.
Well,
we've got to get rid of these guns because there's bad people out there.
Well, not necessarily get rid of or, but control. Now,
control them. You try to buy a gun today, and guess what happens? You have to fill out a form. You have to go before the state police. They call it up, and they ask if you've got a criminal record.
Right.
They do what they call a NICS check, and that's the end of it. It takes about 15 minutes. Do you know how much a background check cost? It takes... When I was in the Army, I'd have a background check for secret clearance, and this was, 50 years ago. They didn't have fancy computers then. But today, they say it could take anywhere from a week to 3 weeks to do it, sometimes even a month. Yeah. And that's a background check for government work. And when they talk, what do you mean background check? Is that what you want to have as a background check? What is a background check? Does anybody know? They don't.
Well, Fred, I absolutely 100% agree on your point that mental health is a taboo in this country, and we aren't doing enough to address it. And I'm glad you brought that up because it is an issue. I don't think addressing that necessarily replaces the other. And you're right. Sometimes whenever there's an incident like Texas, we rush to judgment on one thing or the other, in this case, gun control. But the unfortunate, result, knock-on effect of you know, mental health problems quite often leads to what we're seeing in Texas and Buffalo. And, you know, need we go on and on, you know, back through history, back to Columbine, you know, how many times are we going to react with shock and awe and, you know, thoughts and prayers? I don't know. I'm not the person who has those answers, but I do agree with you, Fred, that addressing mental health issues is something that this country hasn't done quite enough of. And there is a stigma attached. Like you said, someone has a mental health issue, and we all do of some degree, you know, it's looked at negatively, and there's a stigma, and we've got to end that. We've got to address it. We all have mental health issues of some degree. Some figure out the way through life on how to address it. Others take out their aggressions in a way that results in what we've seen far too often. All right, let me take a breath. And thanks, Fred, for that call. I'm going to read Charlie over at Patchwork Farm and Bakery. Our good friend over there wrote to me after I was pointing out my favorite spots in the Glover Metroplex. And he writes, "Hey, Rick, you forgot to mention in Glover that the Red Sky Trading Post is a real fun place." Oh, my gosh. I can't believe I left it off my list. That was an omission. That was not a slight. I often mention Red Sky Trading Post. It's this little barn that you pull into the driveway of the house, and you ride along a little stream, and you walk in, and it's on the honor system. And there are wonderful things there. There's milk and eggs and bread and, wonderful dessert items. That's usually what I will avail myself of. There's tchotchkes in the back. They used to have I think one side is open now. They used to have the other side open. There was a little bit more with like a magazine rack or whatever. But you go in, you know, you select your items. There's a log there. You write your name and what you've taken and the amount. And then there's a box to pay. And you throw your money in. I think there's a box with some change there if you need to make change. But it is a fabulous place in Glover. And that was my stumble there. Red Sky Trading Post, if you're ever in Glover. All right, let's head to Corinth. Talk to Forbes. Good morning, Forbes.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I wish I had called in when the fellow did the kayaking on Lake Champlain.
Yeah.
How big is Lake Champlain in retrospect to other lakes? I know it covers New York and Vermont and part of Canada.
Right.
But just how big is it?
So it's 120 miles long. And I don't know the width. I'm going to say, 20 miles, wide. I could be making that up at its widest point. And it's, you know, quite impressive. It got the label of sixth Great Lake to get funding for the Echo Center. But compared to the Great Lakes, those five, it's kind of weak. You know, it's not quite as big as the Great Lakes. So,
tributary, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's 490 square miles. Is that right? 430 square miles of surface area. So,
wow.
Yeah. So 120 miles long is what our kayaker Jordan did, and he started in the southern part where it's like you said, you could throw a stone across it, and then finished up in Quebec.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's like the Connecticut River. Where it starts is a little stream.
Yep. Okay, and I was wrong. I said 20 miles at its widest. It's 12 miles at its widest, Lake Champlain. Yeah, the Connecticut River starts up in the northern New Hampshire, and you would never imagine that it would turn into that great river, you know, not so far south of where it starts, right, Forbes?
Yes, I've camped right in that area and saw where it actually was from a trickle to a stream, and then I've been all the way to Old Saybrook.
Yeah, empties out the Long Island Sound. One more fact. The Lake Champlain forms at its deepest 400 feet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
More impressive than we thought.
Many species of fish, I know that.
Indeed, and a lot of sunken boats. Pretty Thanks, helpful. Forbes.
Okay, bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Sengary. Back to open phones at 802-244-1777, 877-291-8255, and you can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Let's finish up with Forbes. I know I kind of cut him off at the end, but Danny's been working overtime with the stats on Lake Champlain. I'm glad Forbes asked. You know, sometimes just like the guy, just like Jordan Rowell, who did the film, you know, he grew up 7 miles away from this lake, and there it sits, and you just think, oh, yeah, I got this big, you know, beautiful lake over there. It's got some problems. Went out and did the 120-mile kayaking trip and learned a lot about it. Forbes says, well, how big is this lake? How long? How wide? So it's 120 miles long, 12 miles at its widest point, 400 feet deep at its greatest depth. But also, compared to the Great Lakes, I thought it was quite small. Champlain is rather puny compared with the real Great Lakes. It covers 490 square miles. The smallest Great Lake, which is Lake Ontario, is 7,430 square miles. So, just a wee lake compared to the five Great Lakes. But it did get the designation by Congress for a while as the sixth Great Lake. That was to get the funding for the Leahy Center, Echo Leahy Center, which we're happy to have. All right. I said I got some emails in yesterday, a couple for Rick Faux Pas. I read the one from Charlie over at Patchwork Farm and Bakery. Dwight wrote in when I was speaking with Weeza and Sam Sanderson yesterday about Sanderson's wooden bowls. And Dwight writes, as a wood turner, you don't normally turn pine or other conifers. I had asked Sam Sanderson something about the wood, and I think I definitely threw pine in there on the list. I'm such a city boy. Dwight says, nasty sap goes all over the place. He also goes on to say, when I first started turning, I learned that the most important tool for a wood turner is your sharpening stone. All right, great advice there. And great advice, don't turn pine. Oh, man. I don't think anybody listens to me, though, to learn to what I say, to learn techniques on wood turning. They would definitely listen more to Sam and Weeza Sanderson than anything I utter. But, Dwight, you're spot on. Thanks for catching me off first. Pine. I'd like a pine bowl. No, you wouldn't, is what the Sandersons would say and what Dwight said. Okay, the other thing we did yesterday, I had the opportunity to speak with Janet Stewart, and her and her husband, Ray Shatney, have Shat Acres. They raise the Highland cattle. And here's what Michelle wrote. She said, I thought your interview with Janet Stewart was excellent, really interesting. I learned a lot of things I didn't know, and she said her husband did as well. And so she learned about the couple, but also about Highland cattle, and that's just a great example. I learned too, and it was so interesting to have Janet on explain all that about the Highland cattle. You know, I see them, oh, great shaggy cows with big horns, and they're Scottish. And I think, oh, well, that's about all I need to know. And I wish science classes were taught, biology classes were taught a little bit more like the interviews that I'm able to have with people like from Fish and Wildlife or with farmers. Just this connected understanding to the world around you. it's a little bit different approach. And again, I'm many years out of grade school and high school, so how things are being taught now at that level probably are a little bit more like I'm talking about. But to hear Janet Steward talk about the farm and the farming and the choice of cattle and, you know, how you feed them, it really does help connect you with the food you eat. She was saying they invite people to come and see, you know, the humane practices they have, and for people to understand, you know, this beef that you're eating, this is what it comes from, and this is why we've chosen this particular breed of cattle. Gosh, we have so many interesting things around us to learn every single day, and help me, you know, find those things. That's the other thing. Someone suggested Ray and Janet and their operation, their Highland cattle operation in Greensboro Bend and Plainfield as guests for this show. I will not be able to find every single neat and interesting thing that's in Vermont, and there are tons. So when you know of something, please let me know. Tomorrow you're going to learn about, when I go up to Island Pond, and I'm at the Island Pond Library, we're going to meet someone who's worked in the railroads, on the trains for almost 40 years. And that was a massive part of Island Pond. But we're also going to meet a person, a woman who is, the town clerk for, what's called UTG, and it's Unified Towns and Gores. And so in the kingdom, there are small towns and gores where people live. And you're not going to have a select board. You're not going to have a town clerk and a full government operation for some of these small towns and gores, right? But you still have services. You still need to be represented in some way. And so there's one person, Gina Vigno, who under the aegis of what's called UTG, Unified Towns and Gores, does represent them, does help provide those services. And I don't know exactly how it works, and I've been dying to find this out. It's going to be another civics lesson, much like we had last week with the assistant judges or side judges. I found that fascinating. I hope this is stimulating you as well, because that's the type of subjects I love to ferret out and to find the guests for, and then help you know more about what goes on in your state. So don't be shy when I say at the end of every show, you know, feel free to suggest guests or topics. It's incredibly sincere. When someone does write and tell me of something interesting, I usually follow up almost 100% of the time and try to get people on the air to talk about it. One thing we'll talk about in a few weeks is form-based code. It's a zoning procedure that Winooski, for instance, is using. And you'll learn about that. All right. That'll wrap it up for open phones for the week. So, Danny, you know what to do. Yep, shut it down. That is our show for today. Vermont Viewpoint is directed at the big switch. Shut it down right there. Directed by Danny McGivergan. And, again, to suggest topics, guests, email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. You can listen to past episodes of Vermont Viewpoint by downloading our podcast at WDEVradio.com. Common Sense Radio with Bill Sarah's up next. Tomorrow, I'll meet you in Island Pond. I'll be at the Island Pond Library. We'll talk books, trains, public service, music, and more.